right. So for those of you who are fans of the UFC, you're going to know our next guest. But for those of you unfamiliar with UFC, we're going to watch this quick video. Has been one of the biggest names in the world of MMA for more than a decade and is still competing at the highest level. As the former UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion, Tate is a mother of two who resides and trains in Las Vegas. She most recently fought in the UFC in July of 2022, but one of her biggest victories in 22 came as the winner of the Celebrity Big Brother Season 3, to the delight of over 5 million social media fans. Outside of the ring, Misha has always had an interest in construction and working with her hands. If she wasn't a professional fighter, she could see herself in construction. So she'll speak about being a fighter in and out of the ring in a traditionally male-dominated industry. I'm excited to announce Misha Tate. Get ready, cause I've had enough. I see it all, I see it now. I got the eye of the dog.
What a great introduction. That video always gets me pumped up. I'm like, am I nervous or am I just pumped up? I don't know. How was lunch? It looks great. It's good. Awesome. And how's the summit been? Yeah? Great. Good. All right. Well, I'm here to share my story with you guys. And as she mentioned, talk about being a woman in a male-dominated world. Don't worry. I love you guys. But you know, it started as a freshman in high school for me. I was kind of bumming around after cross-country season had finished because I love to play sports. And in the winter, only basketball was offered for females. So I'll tell you a little secret. I cannot play basketball. I am terrible at it. And to this day, you will not find me on a court. Not only am I terrible, but I have no desire to get any better at it. So I'm just thinking, you know, what am I going to do? And my best friend at the time, Sharon, turns around to me and she says, hey, Misha, do you want to go out for wrestling? And I said, well, they don't have a girls' wrestling team. And she said, yeah, I know. But they can't tell us we can't do it if they don't have a girls' wrestling team, right? And I said, okay. Yeah, what's the worst that can happen? So I said, I'll go home and ask my mom. So I did. And I said, hey, Mom, what do you think about me going out for wrestling? She looked at me and she said, boys' wrestling? And I said, well, yeah, but, you know, it would mostly be Sharon and I wrestling. Like, probably wouldn't even wrestle the guys that much. You know, like, I knew what wrestling practice was going to be like if I showed up the next day. No idea. And she said to me, well, I don't think you're going to like it. I don't think you're going to like it. But I'm not going to tell you that you can't do anything that you want to do. So I said, cool. Thanks, Mom. And she said, that's on one condition. She said, do not tell your father. I said, deal. So I showed up for wrestling practice the next day, and I didn't even have wrestling shoes. My mom didn't think I was going to like it to the point where she wanted to invest $25 in wrestling shoes, you know. So the coach looks at us, and he says to me, what are you doing here? I said, well, I want to wrestle. And he turned around, probably so I couldn't see him laughing, honestly. And when he turned back around, he didn't really say anything. He just pointed to one of the more experienced guys that was about my size on the team. And he called him over and he said, go. I said, wait, aren't you going to teach me anything? I don't know anything, nothing. And he blew the whistle. And I was in my first wrestling match. And for the better part of the next 2 hours, I got my butt kicked all up and down that mat. It was very clear there was no welcoming party for the girls on the team. And I learned a couple things. I learned that, one, I am no better at wrestling than I am at basketball. I was terrible. But I also went home and a little fire had been lit. The difference was, is I was passionate about wrestling from day one. It was the hardest thing that I had done, bar none. And I wanted to get better at it. And I knew that wouldn't be hard to do because, again, I was really terrible. So I just thought, you know, if I just show up every day, I have to get better at this, right? So I did for the next 4 years. I never missed practice. And at the end of the season, a lot of people ask me, this in general, people ask me, you know, what is the best accolade of your career? What do you consider the best? And most people would look at my UFC belt and say, well, that's got to be it, right? It's actually not. It actually happened that senior year at that banquet because I was used to not winning anything. I didn't win matches, and I hardly ever. And I didn't win awards because I couldn't win matches. And you don't win matches, you don't win awards. So they got to an award called the Coach's Award, which is kind of defined by somebody who has hard work ethic, shows up every day, is nice to be around, and kind of maybe embodies what you would like more people to kind of take their character after, right? They announced my name. My jaw hit the floor. I said, there is no way that 4 years ago, this was the team that was trying to get me to quit. You know, for the better part of that first season, they definitely thought, like, girls don't belong here. We just got to show them they don't belong here. I'm just going to make it really hard on them. But that's exactly what motivated me to keep showing up every single day. And it taught me a very valuable lesson that I carried through the rest of my life and my career. And that was perception can change. And perception can be changed if you just show up and you work hard every single day and you don't segregate yourself. You know what I realized is that men and women are not that different. Now, before I lose some of you and say, yeah, right, I'm married, before I lose some of you with that, I'm talking about goals and dreams. You know, I still believe that goals and dreams are not gender-based. They are goals and dreams, regardless of who has those goals and dreams. So I learned that lesson. Fast forward, I'm going to college, and a friend of mine, Rosalia, again, I have this Destiny has this way of finding me, even though sometimes I'm reluctant to it. She asked me, hey, would you like to go out to this mixed martial arts club sport? And I looked at her and I said, nope. Mm-mm. I don't think so. Not for me. And so she went by herself. And the next day she came back and she was bugging me again. And I said, God, this girl's not going to leave me alone. So I guess I'll go just to humor her. And I went. And my first day, I learned how to choke people. Uh-huh, you know where I'm going with this. So immediately, I was like, wait a minute, I'm very intrigued. This is great. I started learning arm bars, triangle chokes, rear naked chokes, all these different submissions, and I said, no, this is great. But there was one problem. There was this other aspect to mixed martial arts called striking, and I was like, no thanks. I'll show up and I'll learn the submissions, but I have no desire to punch anybody, and I certainly have no desire to get punched in the face. Not for me. And I look back and I find it how incredible it is that sometimes we don't know very much about ourselves. You know, I've made a career off of it now. And I would have thought that is the last thing. I mean, how many of you have ever been in a situation like that where you've really surprised yourself? You didn't know, where you didn't know that you would like it. Maybe you just stepped outside of your comfort zone and you're like, man, I really love this. This is great. That was the big moment for me when I realized, okay, you know, this mixed martial arts is something I'm interested in. But it wasn't until I went to my very first live event. So it was a couple weeks after I had been doing this club sport, and I was not interested in striking, and I still thought fighting was, well, you know, it had that connotation back then, that it was, what, barbaric, human cockfighting. I mean, if you heard all these things, right, that it was just, you know, sponsors were afraid to associate with it. So I guess I kind of thought the same thing. I definitely thought it wasn't for me. And I go to this fight card, and you guys, I literally had a visceral reaction to the fights. It was anything but what my preconceived notion was. I saw heart, I saw determination. I saw, the warrior spirit. I saw all these things, and I'm like, well, I definitely resonate with that. And if they can do it, why can't I do it? So I'm sitting there as the fight ends. The card's done. Everybody's starting to leave. And I'm still sitting there, and I'm just kind of taking it all in. And I hear the intercom go off, and it says, in 3 weeks, we're going to be hosting our first only female fight card. Anybody know where I'm going with this? So 3 weeks later, I find myself in a dressing room warming up for my first fight. Mm-hmm. I still didn't know how to throw a punch, because have any of you done martial arts? Show of hands. Anybody done any form of martial arts? Karate, anything like that? Okay, so you understand you don't learn it in 3 weeks. It doesn't happen. You don't learn anything great in 3 weeks. I certainly didn't learn how to strike in 3 weeks. So I'm warming up, and I think, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? Well, let me tell you. This is a common theme. What's the worst that can happen? So I get out there, and I know that I don't want to strike, right? I want to get this to the ground. So I do. It's actually a relatively easy takedown. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I've been wrestling guys for so long. That was the easiest. And she's really tall stance, you know, not like those low wrestlers that you just can't get underneath. So I take her down, and I'm so inexperienced. I kid you not, you guys, I don't think I threw a punch on the ground. I just wrestled her, and I tried to pin her the whole time. And I'm like, oh, you know? So second round starts. And I'm just like, okay, I've got to close the distance. Well, there was a problem. She's a Muay Thai fighter, and they obviously game planned between that 60 seconds. How are we going to stop her from doing that? They put me in a Muay Thai clinch. Anybody know what that is? No? Do you have anybody who could help me to paint a picture, any volunteers that could come up just so I could demonstrate on? Come on, don't be scared. You guys, I don't fight people unless I'm getting paid for it, so I'm not going to hurt you. Come on up. All right, there we go. We got a volunteer.
Because I have kind of a fulcrum point on the shoulders. So as I'm trying to get under her, she's just with me. She's moving. And then she begins to pull my head down to where she begins to knee me right in the face. Thank you very much.
Hey. See, did I grab the right remote? Yes. So I can be gentle, just so you know. But after I got kneed in the face, smashed, actually clean on, I feel my nose break, and it was a pretty bad break. I'm dazed. I don't know exactly where I'm at and what I'm doing. I'm kind of trying to figure it out. I'm taking it all in, but my nose is just bleeding profusely. We kind of slide down to the ground. I think at this point I'm diving at ankles, probably, is what I'm doing. And she spins around, and she gets on my back. And to this day, this is a very vivid moment in my career, because I'm on my knees and my forearms. And I'm guarding myself because, you know, of course, she's trying to get a choke in at that point. That's, you know, the evolution of what happens on the ground, typically. And I'm thinking, and everything's silent. And I'm just thinking, and I'm watching this steady stream of blood come out of my nose. Everyone done eating? Okay, just making sure. And this pool of blood is getting bigger in front of my face, and all this chaos. I mean, she's still hitting me. She's still trying to choke me out. And at that moment, I figured out that I was in a fight. A little late to the draw on that, but I figured it out. And I said, you know, if she beats me in the striking, that's one thing. But she's not going to beat me in the wrestling. I was like, so this, fill in the blank, is not going to be on my back. And I rodeoed her down like a bull into the guard position, which is just basically just down in front of me. And I just started wailing on her. And eventually, I was on my tippy toes reaching to the sky, and I was just going to town. And there's blood all over me. There's blood all over her. I mean, it was a very, very graphic fight as far as blood goes. And the buzzer rings, and I go back to my corner for preparing for round three. I'm like, guys, I got it. Finally figured it out. I'm here for a fight. Okay, we got it. We got this. Round three. And they look at me and they said, you're not going out for round three. We're throwing in the towel. man, that was a gut punch. That really sucked because I finally felt like I figured it out. And, you know, they in hindsight, it was a smart decision, right? I'm a broke college kid. There is no medical insurance there. Those medical bills are on me. My nose is smashed. Okay, so it was the logical thing to do. But in that moment, the fighter had been born, right? And I wanted to go back out for round three. And the relief on her face pissed me off. Ooh, it pissed me off because, I mean, she dropped her knee. Oh, thank God. Yeah, you're right. Thank God. So my mom, my poor mom, she was there first row screaming the entire time, only to find her daughter later bleeding over a trash can, in which she swooped me up in her arms and took me in the car. And I know that that was really hard for her. She was the only one of my family or friends who came to be there for me. And to make matters worse, you know, we had a long drive home. We actually from Washington, so we had to go from Wenatchee back to Tacoma over the pass. And I'm sulking and everything. But to make matters worse, my grandparents are visiting from out of town and coming home for Christmas break. And on my father's side, I looked like, if you could imagine a raccoon and a lion having a baby. That was me. Two giant black eyes, and I had a wide nose about as wide as my face, no indentation. And I heard it all. My grandparents were not happy with my decision. You know, they even lectured my parents. Why are you going to let her do that? My mom's like, let her. She's 19 years old. Like, isn't there a point when we can't, like, just, you know, we don't get to control them anymore? But it was everything from, you know, thank God she got that out of her system. Well, she learned her lesson. She'll never do that again. And I just had to basically endure it for a couple weeks because obviously I didn't have a leg to stand on in this. It's not like I could be like, oh, this is a good idea. You know, this is a great idea. This is actually a really good idea. No, obviously at that point, it certainly seemed like the worst idea I had ever had. But I already knew that I had to do it again. I had already made my mind up. So all that stuff that I was hearing was just fueling the fire that had already been born, because I felt like I've got to do this at least one more time, you guys, at least one more time, because I couldn't leave that feeling of round two, being ready for round three and finally having figured it out, like what I was there to do, and then just not do it again. Like, I could have done better. I knew that. So I didn't want to give up. So I came back. I won my next six amateur fights. I got brought in by Strikeforce to fight Elena Beef Maxwell, if that gives you any indication of her build and stature, up a weight class in her hometown, which her coach was the headliner for the event. So I was supposed to lose that fight, just be frank. I was brought in to be the sacrificial lamb. I signed the contract and I said, what do I got to lose? She's a two-time K1 kickboxing world champion, mind you. Yeah, so she was no slouch on her feet. But at the end of three rounds, I had wrestled the shit out of her. Am I allowed to say that? I'd taken her down, and I had just made it my world, and I won the decision. And at that point, Strikeforce noticed me and said, hey, we think instead of just bringing you in to lose fights, do you want to sign with us? And I said, yeah. And that was the moment, 2008, when I realized, I think I might be able to make a career out of this. I moved into a 22-foot RV, and I stayed there for the better part of 2 years, sacrificing everything to just making this dream come true. I knew that I couldn't afford luxuries in life because we didn't get paid well. You know, those first fights were a couple $100, you know? So now I needed big sacrifice. If I wanted big dreams, I needed big sacrifice. And I beat Elena. I continued to climb my way up the rankings. Eventually, I became the number one contender, and I'm fighting Marlos Kunin. You might not know who Marlos Kunin is, but she was an idol to me because at that time, we didn't really have female idols, and she had begun a few years before me. She had an electrifying fight with Chris Cyborg. Tell me you guys know who that is. Some of you guys know who that is? Yeah. She's a beast of a woman. And at the height of her career, Marlos Kunin gave her a good run for her money. And it's funny is that I was just getting my start in Strikeforce at that time. So this is, you know, a couple years later. But I remember at the time when I watched Marlos fight Cyborg, I was like, oh, I hope I never have to fight her. And then what's the good old saying is that you want to train and you want to compete until your idols become your rivals. So here I find myself in that exact situation. I said, wow, I actually am like, I'm ready and I'm confident to fight this woman. I've come so far. I'm great. So what happens? I get the worst injury to date leading up to a fight. I tear my MCL, grade 3 tear, and I had bursitis in my leg. It was like double, maybe triple. It was like just a big sausage leg. So for like 3 weeks, that was about 3 weeks out from my fight, I'm dragging my leg through water. I'm swimming. That's what I can do. And I would do ground and pound on a grounded bag. That was the only training that I could do. But I nursed it. I did a little bit of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Woo, shout out for that if anybody knows about it. It's great. But it got me ready for the fight. I went out there. I definitely wasn't 100%. But again, what did I tell myself? What do I have to lose? I've never been a world champion before. I'd like my shot. I'd like my opportunity. So I go out there, and in the fourth round, I get a submission. And I submit Marlis Konnan, and I become the Strikeforce Women's Bantamweight World Champion. And at that time, it's kind of like becoming the UFC world champion for women because, well, at that point, we still weren't allowed in the UFC. So that was a pretty great moment for me. But the problem was, is the next fight was Ronda Rousey. Mm-hmm. So as many of you know, I didn't win that fight, but I won a lot from that fight because that was the fight that changed Dana White's mind. That was the fight that let women come into the UFC. It was watching that and seeing that there was a level of competition that he wasn't aware of, that we were actually good, like we didn't suck, and we could fight, and we could entertain, and we could have rivalries, and we could sell stories. So I remember I was in Florida. I went down to visit my grandparents, who, by the way, were now supportive of me fighting. So, you know, I still had the belt that I had won, but I had lost, you know, but you get to keep the belt that you won. So anyways, I come home, I come to my grandparents' house. You know, I had dedicated that fight to my grandpa. I didn't win. Sorry, grandpa. But I spent time with them regardless, and I get a call from Dana White, and he says, you might want to sit down. I said, okay. You know, I've been sulking. I've been crying, and I'm so upset that I lost my belt, and my arm's in a sling, and I'm like, this sucks. And he says, you did it. Women are coming to the UFC. And I said, wow. And he said, and I'm giving you a $50,000 bonus. Oh my God. At that time, I mean, like I told you, we were not making money. So for me, that was life-changing money. And I said, great, okay, so I'm ready. I start fighting in the UFC. I start climbing the rankings. 2016 comes. I'm standing across the octagon from Holly Holm, March of 2016. This was UFC 196, Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. I'm the co-main event, and I've got an opportunity to capture UFC gold. Now, mind you, this is coming off of Holly Holm head kicking Ronda's head into the oblivion. Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember that, but that sounds, you know, that sent reverberations around the world. So, you know, I'm not supposed to win this fight, right? I'm going to get head kicked and knocked out too. So I sign and I say, okay, you know, what have I got to lose? Here's my opportunity. You miss 100 of the 100 shots you don't take, right? So first round starts and I lose a close decision of that round. I couldn't get it to the ground, you know. She's got footwork like, I don't know, name a great football player or something, and she's just juking the heck out of me. So I couldn't get it to the ground. Second round comes, I get it to the ground pretty quickly. It's a 10-8 round for me. It means I basically up a round at that point on her. And she comes out for the third round. She smartens up a little bit. Okay, I'm not going to take as much time. I'm not going to take as many chances, right? So she's picking me apart. I'm not able to get the shots in that I want. I'm not able to get the takedown. Round three goes by. Round four comes. Same thing. She's really smart. She's very strategic. Extremely difficult to get a hold of. I don't get the takedown. I lose the round. I'm down a round now. And round five comes. And I had 60 seconds, which is really more like maybe 45 with your coaches. And I was thinking, what is the worst thing that could happen right now? And a lot of people would say getting knocked out. Like, that would be the worst thing, right? That'd be terrible. Yes, it would be terrible, but it's actually the second worst thing. The worst thing for me in that moment was to realize if I lost that fight because I didn't give everything that I had, that would be the worst thing because I would have to live with that. You know, the rest of the world might think the knockout because they're going to see it and they'll replay it and I, you know, whatever. But to me, the worst thing that could happen was to not give my all. So we had a very strict game plan going into this. It was be cautious, be patient, don't rush for the takedown because she's dangerous. You could get knocked out. Right, got it. Round five, it's not working. It's not working, okay? If round five goes like round three and four, we're losing this title fight. We're losing it. So I decide I'm going to throw caution to the wind. And I went out there, and I shot the most desperate takedown of my life. I didn't get it. I did it again. I got it. I said, ooh. Thank God. But in round two, I wasn't able to finish her, you know? So I'm hoping that I know I've got to work. And we're probably about halfway through the round, and I know that the clock is my worst enemy right now. That is the worst. That's the problem. I've got the clock working against me. But my coach told me that if I put pressure on her the way that I can, she's going to have two options. Either she's going to stay down there and get finished, or she's going to make a mistake getting up. So she chose the latter. You know, she's got a big heart and a fighter spirit too. So she said, you know, I'm going to try to get out of this. Well, she made the mistake. In comes the arm right under the neck. And I've got her locked in a rear naked choke. It's all but done. And seconds are going by. And she stands up and I'm following her. And she actually throws both of us in the air and flips us over onto the ground, onto the back, because, again, she is fighting for her life in there. I can't see you over there. Hi. All right. So she's fighting valiantly. And I know in her mind what must have been going through is, well, what are the worst things that could happen? To her, tapping was the worst thing that could happen. So she didn't tap. She actually went to sleep. Yeah, she went to sleep. Same can't be said for the main event. I just wanted to say that the guys, yeah, Connor tapped. he tapped. So Holly went out on her shield. She is just such an amazing woman. I'm still such a big fan of hers. But next thing you know, I mean, and it felt like eternity because you're holding on to that. And I'm like a dog on a bone. But the referee is pulling my arms off of her. And I get up and I realize, you know what? This has been 10 years in the making because my first amateur fight was about February of 2006, and now we're March 2016, and I've just captured the UFC gold. I'm at the pinnacle of the sport. I'm the top of the top. I'm 1%. I'm a 1%er. And I'm celebrating. And people ask me, you know, what does that feel like? It's so hard to put that into words. It's so hard. But I'll tell you, it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It was a lot of changing perception. It was a lot of uphill battles. It was a lot of never give up. It was a lot of adversity. And in that moment when you finally get what you've been working so hard for and what you've stumbled so hard for, it's a feeling you truly can't put words to. So, you know, I'm elated. My family's there. My dad's in the octagon. My dad. Oh, my God. My dad. My dad hated me wrestling. We didn't tell him, remember? Yeah, at least through most of the season. Once my mom figured out that I was going to actually continue doing this, we did let him in on the secret, and he was like, what? You told her she could what? Too late, Dad. thank goodness for my mom. You know, she's always been my ride or die. My grandparents, you know, they also converted to supporting me in fighting. My dad has been at, you know, just about all of my fights, cheering and supporting. And it's just so wild to me how those dreams and goals seemed so crazy to them and to me too, but how perception can be changed, right? So I come back to that as I kind of, let me grab my notepad here because this is the only part I had to memorize, thankfully. And I do get hit in the head for a living. So, Memory's not my strong point. All right, so a couple key things that I have learned that were definitely worth writing down is, one, I believe that dreaming big is how we find our purpose. I think dreaming outside the box, I think dreaming beyond, bigger than, when everyone else thinks you're wild for wanting to do it or pursuing a career in whatever it is, that's how you find your purpose, right? And we can have multiple purposes in life. Obviously, I'm a mother too, right? I have two beautiful, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So I have that purpose in my life too. I've also learned that perception can be changed. I think I've said that ad nauseum, but that is very important because a lot of times if we sit back and we think that it's never going to change, well, then it is never going to change. Like, we have to take action to make it change, and we have to never give up to make it change, right? I've also learned that respect can be earned and it can be created because sometimes it wasn't there to begin with, right? When I joined the wrestling team, I definitely learned that they didn't have respect for us. No, definitely not. So that was created. I feel like losses are nothing more than opportunities to grow. I mean, that for me, you know, I didn't tell you guys about every loss I've had in my career, but, you know, you lose and you learn. Every time that I've lost, I feel like I grew. I had to. That was my only choice. I mean, that or give up. So when you refuse to give up, when you don't have that as an option, you learn and you grow, right? So losses are opportunities to grow. And adversity, that's just an opportunity to show strength. You know, like a lot of people don't like to go through adversity. Why? Well, I mean, it's not the funnest thing. I don't think we're supposed to have fun all the time. And I don't think we're supposed to be happy all the time. But when we get through adversity, when we get to the other side of it, I think we figure out that we're stronger for it, right? Then we realize how strong we were. If it wasn't for wrestling, I really believe I never would have known how strong I am. If it wasn't for putting myself in uncomfortable positions, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, I wouldn't know how strong I am. And what a sad thing to think that I could have, you know, like could have never discovered that strength that I have, the mentality that I have. So again, it comes all back to mentality. And I think that your dreams and goals, they don't care about your gender. They don't care about gender. They don't care about race. They don't care about anything because they're yours. So as long as you put them out, right? As long as they're out there. And whether it's you, even if you've accomplished those or you have all, it's never too late to have a mindset shift. And it's also never too late to remember that while you're living life, you're inspiring other people. There's other people that are looking up to you right now and what you're doing and what you're pursuing that you're probably not even aware of. You know, for you ladies in here, there's other little girls out there that just think that would be great to do what you're doing. So you're making great change. And for you gentlemen, give yourselves a pat on the back because you're supporting that change. You're supporting your daughters. You're supporting your wives. You're supporting your sisters. And we couldn't do it without you. You know, we really couldn't. So it's a teamwork and putting that out there. It matters and it makes a difference. And there's a lot of change. You know, one of the biggest compliments that I get to the state is that my kids look up to you. Wow. I mean, talk about pressure. My kids look up to you. And when I say kids, I'm not just talking about little girls. I mean, you would think like, okay, makes sense, little girls. No, I have dads come to me and be like, my son looks up to you. Whoa, I didn't know I could have that impact. I didn't know that little boys were starting to look at females as women, as role models and as icons and as something they could aspire to because they're not distinguishing gender. They're just like, they like what you do. They're inspired by it, right? It's pretty cool. When I grew up, I had only male role models. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's nice to see the change. It's nice to see now that there are little girls in the wrestling room. My daughter wrestles. She's 4 years old. And it's not uncommon. You know, when I was there, it was very taboo. It was very uncommon to see women in a wrestling room. It was very uncommon to see them doing jiu-jitsu. And it was almost unheard of to see a fight. I mean, you should hear the things that they would yell when we were fighting. It was like not taken seriously. But being a part of the change is powerful. And when purpose meets drive, you are powerful beyond measure. That is something that I know firsthand. And I just want to encourage all of you to remember that as you continue to, blaze the trail in whatever you're doing, not just in here, not just in your work, But in life, you know, inspire people, be kind, be good, and just remember that, like, that's powerful when your purpose and your drive. So I love that, actually, this theme here was when I saw, you know, purpose and drive. I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's what it's at. So anyways, that is pretty much going to conclude what I have, my messaging today. I would love to open this up to a question and answer. But first, I would like to say thank you guys so much for having me today. I hope that you enjoyed my story. And I hope that you have a great rest of time in Vegas. Not too many hangovers. Awesome. So can I open this up to Q&A? I forgot to set a timer on this. I don't even know. Oh, yeah. I did good. All right. I have a good sense of time. Anybody have any questions for me? Anybody? I know you probably didn't give you a lot of time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is a great question. So I expected them to teach me something. I didn't expect to be going live the first, you know, 10 seconds of being in the wrestling room. That was definitely, I was scared out of my mind. I was like, oh my God, you know, I just felt like I was being attacked. So it was really scary, but I didn't give up. And I think I figured it out over time. I don't know if it was that moment exactly. I knew that I was passionate at that moment. But I didn't know how that was going to continue to develop my character until you're going through it, right? And it's always the hindsight that gives us the most perspective, because when you're going through it, a lot of times you don't realize that you're making such big change, or that you're growing so much, or that you're going to have these realizations later. You know, it's not till after. Maybe when I won the coach's award and I said, man, who would have thought? You know, and at the first day, I was like, they're going to kill me. They want to kill me. So it definitely took some time for me to realize that I had even changed the perception, that I had even, you know, become welcomed on the team, you know. So, yeah, I think those are things that happen over time. I hope that answered your question. Thank you for the question. Anybody else wondering anything? Yes, you, sir. That was when I won my UFC world title. My first fight was in 2013 for the UFC. It was in 2012. Yeah, the end of 2012, right after I fought Ronda and I lost and I was bumming out. I was moping. And then they had Ronda Rousey fight Liz Carmouche. That was the first female fight. And that was in 2000, I forget what month, but it was into early-ish 2013. So they actually bought Strikeforce and they absorbed everybody in. And it was a relief, because when I fought Ronda the first time in Strikeforce, I knew that the UFC had bought Strikeforce, but we didn't know if the women were coming too. We didn't know. So it was actually a really scary time for us to think, like, I was like, this might be my last fight in Strikeforce. And then I don't know what the future presents. Like, if it's going to the UFC, Dana White has said loud and clear many times, women will never fight in the UFC. So, yep. Well, I'm definitely proud of where it is today. I think it's come a long way. It's nice to see women fighting on regular events. It's not uncommon now, right? I mean, it was very uncommon, and now it's common. And I think that, you know, in truth, women haven't had as much time to be growing up doing these things. You know, like a lot of little boys have been growing up, and it's normalized. It's, you know, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, karate, whatever. Now we're seeing we're starting to see the first wave of what women's MMA could look like if they start like little boys started. Because like when I started, again, I was in high school and I only wrestled in season two, actually. That's not like they welcomed me to like freestyle training or anything like that, you know, so I only got to wrestle in season. And I was 15, you know, I'd missed a lot of time. There's a lot, you know, my daughter's 4. What's she going to be like? She's going to be a savage. You know, she's going to be a real beast. She already is, to be honest. But
in truth, that's going to be the really interesting evolution as we see little girls that were little kids growing up and having that foundational root system of martial arts and then becoming UFC. We're starting to see it as my generation begins to move on or retire, you know. It's great. I love it. And I think it's just going to continue to get more on par with where men's MMA has been at for a while. Yes. I do train now. It's much more challenging. It requires a lot of time management and I know. It can be done. You know, science is a big part of the reason why we're having better longevity these days as athletes. You know, we used to see them retiring longer now, the Tom Brady's, and, you know, there's quite a few UFC fighters that have fought well into their 40s. You know, Randy Couture, Glover Teixeira, he was just a UFC champ, I think, at 41. He touched gold for the first time. So what we're seeing is that, you know, when science is there and we can keep the bodies younger, longer, it actually pays massive dividends in martial arts because there's a skill set acquired, right? So you might be younger, faster, stronger, but there is so much to be learned that you just can't make that up. You can't just magically create that. It's years and reps and reps. So to answer your question, though, how do I do it? Well, I ask for a lot of help because I need it. And a shared calendar is also really helpful. Yeah, a lot of scheduling, a lot of sharing the calendar, a lot of great communication. No, it's hard, you know. And to get a little deeper on that, I really have struggled at times with mom guilt. I mean, anybody else in here, you guys struggle with dad guilt, any mom guilt, right? It's hard. It's so hard to have kids, which is like you love them more than anything and you're working hard to provide the future for them. But I have to remind myself that I can't take away from the present to like build something in the future, right? So how do I do that? How do I figure that out? Well, for me, it looks like 10 minutes of mindful morning. I have to compartmentalize just like I would in a fight. I have to compartmentalize when I'm where. I got to stop trying to multitask because we're pretty good at that. You know, we switch gears a lot. Women can do that. And guys, I praise you guys because you can focus on something. It's like you don't even hear us. It's like, I'm like, how? How? But you guys do that really well. So for me, it's about, hey, you know, I do my 10 minutes of mindful morning time before the TV goes on. We make breakfast together because it's 10 minutes, not a lot of time, but I can give that to my kids before I take them to school, before I take them to childcare. Then they're at school and I bust my butt to get everything that I need done during the day. So when I pick them up, I grab my phone and I say, hey, Siri, set a timer for 30 minutes. And I throw it in the drawer. And then we play. We just play for 30 minutes. We must sound alike. My phone probably went off too. Oh, that was good. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, it was exciting again. So you must follow my career. Yeah, so I appreciate that. So I didn't elaborate on the part in effort to save time for you guys, but I retired in 2016. So after I won that belt, it wasn't all roses and, you know, everything. I lost at my next fight, and my whole life kind of just came crumbling down because I had put everything into being addicted to adversity. And when you're addicted to adversity, it's really taxing. It's really hard on you. If it's what you need to thrive, if it's what you need to perform, yeah, it's really hard to have that 24/7. Now I get through adversity. I know I have the ability to do it, but I don't feel like I need it to be a part of, you know, to be who I am and to be successful. To answer your question, when I came back off that 5-year layoff, I thought that I was retired. I had soul searched. I had found my fiance. I had 2 kids. And when I decided that I wanted to come back to fighting, I was like 9 months pregnant with my son. And my fiance probably thought that I was just being, you know, hormonal crazy, you know, like, oh, this is making no sense. It was during the pandemic. And I just said, God, we all had to reevaluate during that time, right? I mean, we all kind of had to go a little internal and we all had to kind of say, I don't know, reflect, right? So I started deciding, well, what are the most important things to me? You know, it's family, you know, family, friends, relationships. dreams and goals, and time. Those are three things that are really important to me. So I've got family. I have kids now. I'm like, this is great. I love being a mom. What are my dreams and goals? What else do I want to do with my world, with my life? And I said, you know what? I think I want to play it back. I think now that I'm wiser and I've figured it out and I'm more complete, like I know who Misha Tate is now. Before, I was a fighter. That's how I identified myself. I didn't know how to be anything else than that. So I got a bit lost in that. And when I lost my world title and I was in a relationship that wasn't good for me, and I lost my next fight too. I just didn't even show up. I was just on autopilot. I just wasn't there. I don't know. I was broken. I was tired. I was exhausted. I was burnt out. And I said, I think I've hit rock bottom. And if it gets any worse, I don't know where that would go, but it wouldn't be good. Definitely would not be good. So I said, I've got to change. I've got to pull myself up by my bootstraps and I've got to start over. I've got to basically disconnect from everything that I know and I'm comfortable with. And so I did. So I retired and I grabbed my little puppy dog at the time and I went on a 2-week road trip and I just soul searched. And long story short, I found out a lot about myself by figuring out who I am beyond the fighter. You know, now I'm like, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a mom. I own a wellness. I'm a business owner. I'm a public speaker. Somebody who likes to go hiking. I love to bake. There's so many things about me that I just stuffed away because I only had time for this and I needed to make it hard on myself. And that was very toxic for me. So anyways, after 5 years, I realized like, I want to run it back. I want to see how I can do, you know, but now it doesn't define me. You know, being a fighter is a part of who I am. It's not who I am. And wins are a part of who I am, but it's not who I am. And losses, they don't define me anymore. It's just an opportunity. So, you know, I lost my last fight. And my daughter said to me, so sweet. She said, Mommy, you lost. And I really wanted you to win. You didn't win. Out of the mouth of babes, right? You know, and I thought, gosh, I could either let that really hurt my feelings or I could take it for what she's actually saying. It's like, she's on my side. She loves me. She wanted me to win. So what can I do? Tell her, honey, I'm not always going to win. It's not, you know, and that's okay because I tried my best and I didn't win this one, but I'm going to try again. And that was the message. So it was an opportunity to teach her too. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah. Oh, next break into. That would be great. Well, I feel like it's such an uphill battle. And you know what? Honestly, I feel like it's more the fans who choose, you know, if they love you or they don't, or they love your sport or they don't. But what I would like to see is more progression for women in boxing. So it's wild to me that women's boxing has been around a lot longer than women's MMA. But I think there might be some crotchety old men running the organizations up there that just don't get it. Right? They just don't get it. I'm like, you guys, how is MMA able to do it and you couldn't do it with boxing? You're not telling these women's stories. Like, you're not making it compelling. You're not making the viewer want to be interested in this fight beyond just women throwing punches. Like, these women have great stories. It's incredible. So I'm really proud of Amanda Serrano and what she's been able to do. You know, with her boxing, when she's a world champion in like every weight, multiple weight divisions, in many organizations. And she's been working with Logan Paul now as, you know, to get promotion and eyes on women's boxing. And they were the first, I believe it was the first women's boxing fight at Madison Square Garden. Yeah. And they headlined and they were like amazing. They were fantastic and people were blown away. It's like, that's what we needed, you know? So I want to see, you know, women's boxing continue to take off. I guess that would be, that's our sister sport. You know, it's apples and oranges, it's totally different. But again, it's women in combat, right? So I would like to see that continue to flourish. Great question. I will take one more if any ladies have any questions? Don't be shy. No? All right. Correct. Yeah. You're so right. And you know, unfortunately, those of you who have kids know it doesn't come with like a pamphlet or anything. You know, you don't really get to like have major insight on how to do it. But for me, I look at myself as the opportunity to show her again that it's not, I want her to be effort-based. I don't want her to be outcome-based. It's so easy. It's human nature to be outcome-based. We just want to, we want the outcome. If we don't get the outcome, we're a failure. No. Failure is great. I love to fail now. I'm like, great. The more failures, the better. Because every time that I fail, I know that I have an opportunity to build it again. I always talk about this metaphoric house. You know, it's like when you have your first house and you're kind of like, you go to your next house and you're like, oh, this one's, you know, it's better. But if I could build it, if I could do it again, I mean, how many of you live in a house that would change something about your house if you could? If you could change it right now, you would change, right? Something you would change about it, right? We all have that. Even if we've built our dream house, there's going to be something we're like, God, why didn't I think of that? But I think of that through life as a parallel through life. I think of that as like the first house we build is not going to be as great as the second house we build. And it's going to get knocked down. It's going to burn down a lot of times. But do we fear the burning down of the house or do we fear our ability to build it again? I don't fear either of those because I feel like if you have the tools to build it again, you don't have to fear it ever burning down, right? You're just going to build it again. You're going to build it better because you're going to have new life perspective. So my goal is to try to relay that to my daughter the best that I can and prepare her. I mean, she goes to school now and she's like, you know, they were mean to me today. They didn't let me, you know, pick up the toys. And I'm just like, you know, I have to tell her, honey, sometimes it's going to be like that. That's just reality. But if I can know that, if I can sharpen her mind just the way any of us, I think, should walk through life, if it's about what's the worst that can happen. And if it burns to the ground, I can build it again. I can build it again. So that's what I want to instill in my children, is that they can always build it again. And they'll always have me as a support system too, you know. That's important, being present in those moments, those 10 minutes in the morning and the 30 minutes at night. I won't do the Siri thing again. you know, I'm just doing the best that I can. So that's it. Thank you guys so much. This was wonderful. Great audience.
Thank you so much. That was wonderful. We're going to take about a 10 or 15 minute break. Misha's going to stick around for a few minutes, take some pictures, and we'll reconvene around 1:40.